Well, the first thing I wanted to do was embarrass my cousins. So this is my Aunt Rachel, and let's see, a partial crew. We have Grace, Bethany, Talitha, and Ezekiel. He's the only boy, so we got to stick together. Okay, let's see. It's working. Can we dim some of those lights back there? Make it a little easier. Okay, there are some words down there. First of all, thank you for asking me to speak tonight. I'm glad to be able to share what the Lord's doing up at Kingdom Air Corps in Alaska, but it is my prayer and desire tonight that you would see beyond the activities and the adventure that I was able to have while up there and see it as God's eternal purpose and see what he is doing and give glory to him through that. So this is where I was all those months. If you notice, I was gone. So I got up there on May the 11th and just got back earlier this month. Kingdom Air Corps, is their slogan is preparing missionary pilots and mechanics in real-world environments. And, of course, I had to turn off the lights. But my shirt says, "We fix airplanes to help the world know Christ." So this was my excuse to wear a T-shirt tonight, I was telling Jonathan. But that's the mission of Kingdom Air Corps. So, and if anyone can't see, like if I'm standing right in the middle of it, I feel like I'm trying to get out of the way so you can see it. But so what Kingdom Air Corps does is they have airplanes donated. Some are donated by believers. Some are donated by individuals who want a tax write-off, you know, various reasons. But we fix them up and put them back into service strictly for the purpose of missions uses. So reaching places that can't be reached by any other mode of transportation or would take a really long time to reach by, say, boat or something like that. So it's located in Chicoloon, Alaska. That's the yellow dot. And this map, we're going to be going back to this map back and forth some, but just picture it clocked about 45 degrees, and that's going to be your actual north-up view, because that's Russia over there in the top left-hand corner. So it's about 2 hours north of Anchorage, and that's where the ranch is. They call it King Ranch. So they bring in individuals who have a desire to do maintenance and flying for the purpose of mission, of Christian missions, and they train them up there during the summer months, usually from about June through September is usually the tenure up there. So spend a lot of time in the hangar. This is the airstrip, AK-59. It's located between the Chugach Range and the Matanuska Range. And you can see in the bottom picture, off the bluff, there's a river down there. That's the Matanuska River. So we're located right beside that. It's a pretty short airstrip, about 1,700 feet. Dane probably knows that's short. I don't know if any other aviators in here, but it's pretty short. It's curved. It's on a hill. It's a little bit tricky. But this was home for me for the last 5 months or 6 months or however long it was. So they have a dining hall. This is the top view is standing kind of in the middle of the runway and looking down. So we have the hangar, which is in the bottom right corner there, have the hangar and then a dining hall and then a fire hall where we keep firefighting equipment and vehicles, and it doubles as kind of a study hall as well. I included a picture of a sight we often got to see, a moose running around. So that's a moose, cow, and calf out there in the driveway. They would come and just look in the window or whatever. So that was pretty cool. Spent most of my time, well, I probably spent most of my time in that room, the dining hall. But after that, I spent it in the hangar. This is the little cabin that I lived in up there with five other guys. It's about 10 feet wide and 20 feet long. So, you know, about like camp. So you guys know about that stuff. So the bottom picture is pretty dark. Sorry about that. But that's just a row of airplanes looking from the dining hall across across the way towards the Matanuska Range. So working in the hangar, that's how you stack a hangar. We've got three airplanes in there, and you can put four in if the fourth one is pretty small. But so these are all donated airplanes you see here, and most of them are from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So older airplanes, they need a lot of work, and we got to do a lot of work on them. So that's the gentleman I worked primarily with in the hangar, Russell, doing some work there. And Dwayne is a big hot rod fan. So this is one of his trucks that we were actually working on it, getting it ready for a parade up there. So there's airplanes and other fun rides up there. It's my buddy Noah lying on the wing, trying to reach into the wing, fix some things, and that's another picture of him. And my other roommate from Thailand, Kittikun Wichipon Paibun, which his name literally means, Kittikun literally means good news or gospel. So that was pretty neat. His father was big evangelist back in Thailand, and but so there are a couple great guys, really solid guys, and so it's good to get to work with them. And of course, I'm working to build experience in the maintenance field to work towards getting my airframe and power plant certificate, which basically gives me the authority to sign off on the work that I do. So up here, I was working all under either A&Ps or A&Ps with an inspector's authorization so they could sign off all the work that I did up there. Let's see. Okay, so flight training. This is a picture of Mount McKinley as we're flying up over some of the lowlands during a training flight. Just incredibly gorgeous, you know. Some people say we have mountains down here. It's debatable once you've been up there. But just gorgeous. You know, people would say to me up there, meet people in the airport or on the airplane, and they're like, oh, you're from North Carolina. It's so beautiful. I want to go there. I'm like, you're from Alaska. But it is. Everywhere we go, there is so much beauty that God has made. So I was training mostly in Cessna 150s, a little two-seater airplane. The one in the bottom is very similar to a 150. It's a little two-seater. Did quite a bit of flying with Jason Bailey. He was my instructor up there for the first half of my time up there. We have, adjacent to the hangar, we have a room where we do study, ground school, all that good stuff. So just to kind of show you what's up there. While I was up there, I was able to make it to my solo, which is a point where the student is able to take the airplane up solo without instructor. You can't have any passengers either, which is a good idea. But so able to fly solo. So there's some pictures of that day. Just again, this was my instructor Zach Loving, who he was the one who kind of got me to that solo point. Really, really worked hard with me to get me there, and so really grateful to him. His three boys are in that top left-hand picture, and Noah and Derek, a couple other pilots. It was very encouraging to see how they put a focus on the Lord, even in every aspect of the training was infused with a reliance on God. You know, before we taxied out to take off, Zach would say, "All right, well, you know, we're going to pray and ask the Lord's guidance and blessing before we get going." And so needed an extra measure of grace on solo day. So there they are praying for me there. I made it, obviously. But that is 200 Super Dog. That's the airplane we're very proud of. I think it's a later 40s model, Cessna 150. So I'm always amazed because, you know, when someone has a car from the 40s, you know, you got it restored and it's all shined up and nice and you don't take it out except on special occasions and all this kind of stuff. And these, you know, it's a daily driver, you know. So it's pretty cool just to see how they're really basic and simple to work on, and it's just a lot of fun to do that. This one, so the tradition is when you solo, and it might not be like this everywhere, but it was a tradition started, I think, back in World War II, where when the student solos, when they do their first solo, they get their shirt tails cut. And you, so they'll, you know, write your name on there and the runway numbers and place where you soloed and all, and hang it up. So that was that night. And the other tradition up at Kingdom Air Corps, Dwayne, who's pictured in the top right picture, Dwayne is the director up there, and his tradition is chocolate milkshakes. So vanilla ice cream, Hershey's syrup, and a drill with a paint mixer chucked into it is the that's our thing. And so anytime anybody solos, gets a certificate, really anything that is exciting enough, he'll say milkshakes for everybody. So milkshake night, big deal, a lot of fun. And that actually happened. I'm not really doing this in chronological order. This is one of the last things I did before coming back. But so big blessing to have been able to do that. This is just to show that it wasn't all work and no play. There's a lot of things we got to do, from hiking, state fair, the Alaska Central Railroad, which is the largest privately owned railway in Alaska, because the real one is owned by the state. So that's teeny. But yeah, lots of exciting things. And Hannah, most of you know my sister Hannah, that's been out at Frontier School of the Bible. She actually was serving at a youth camp just up the road from me. We didn't plan it that way at all, but she ended up being led there, and I ended up being led to Kingdom Air Corps, and it was 20 minutes away from each other. So that was really a blessing just to get to spend time with her and do some hiking. Really awesome times. That one in the bottom right, Alaska road construction, next 2,000 miles, is no joke. They're constantly having to work on the roads up there. Really, because there's really only two roads. So there's two roads out of Anchorage. One goes kind of northwest and the other goes kind of northeast. So, you know, heavy traffic, and so that's no joke. Not even looking at my notes. Let's see what I'm missing. Okay. Nope, didn't miss anything. Okay. So, Brooks Range Bible Camp. This is a yearly outreach of King AmeriCorps where they, because their focus is missions primarily, it's not primarily airplanes and aviation. It's about spreading the gospel, investing in discipleship, and bringing glory to God. So Brooks Range Bible Camp is where they take the staff and, or really the trainees that are going through the aviation program and give them an opportunity to use their training in a real-life setting, ministering to children from the villages of Alaska. So these northern villages, you'll see the blue dot that says Winter Trail. I'm not sure where that name comes from on Google Maps. That's just what it came up as. But that is where the camp is located, at the base of the Brooks Range. That's the northernmost mountain range in Alaska. So it's about 400 miles between Chicoloon and Crevice Creek, where the camp is at. It shows up as Winter Trail right there. So that's 400 miles-ish as the crow flies. We load up the airplanes. We spend the first part of the summer working on the airplanes, getting them ready to go for this trip. We load up all the staff and some of the supplies and, you know, things like that. Mostly personal gear goes in the airplanes, and fly that trip up, fly that 400 miles up over, and there's nothing. There's nothing out there. It's complete, just kind of untouched land except for where the occasional village of 100 to 300 people is. So most of the folks flew up there to Crevice Creek. They pair a student with an instructor, or not all the students get to fly just by numbers of the airplanes. But I didn't actually get to fly that trip because they needed people to make a supply trip. So we had this truck, a 2500, loaded. The back was full of all the food for the 2 weeks of camp, and a tank of extra car gas. And then the trailer is actually a fuel tank in itself. It's like a 300-gallon fuel tank. So there was a lot of weight, and that poor truck about had it by the time we made it up there. But it's about a 600-mile road trip. But we made it up there, you know, with trailer brakes going out. We lost one of those tires that's strapped on the back into a wastewater treatment area and dug it out. So we drove to Coldfoot, which I think you can see on the map, Coldfoot there. We drove there and then via pretty much a dirt road, and then flew supplies into the camp from there. So, yeah, that was an exciting trip. The bottom left picture is, since they took the seats out of the airplane to load it up with stuff and make the trips, I spent the whole day basically napping in the back of the pickup, because we left the previous morning at about 8 and got there the next morning at 2 a.m. So it was a long trip. I slept most of the time that they did the work of transferring stuff. On the way up, we stopped at... that picture's too dark to read. This is inside the Arctic Circle, and that is the sun shining at midnight. So that was pretty cool to see in person. Let's see. There you go. I found these two pictures of some work we did up there We got there about 4 days prior to the main group of staff to rebuild these tents. They're basically like wall tents with wooden platforms. We rebuilt all the platforms. There were six of them to build and about four guys. We got it done. But I didn't really have any pictures of it, so that's what you get. I hope you can get the idea of it. It was a lot of fun, a lot of work, very worth it. So, you know, you guys are familiar with Christian camp life, and so you kind of get the basic idea, but it's kind of... It's a unique experience because of the fact that most of these kids have zero Christian influence back in their villages, very isolated, and some of them have a church, but no one really running the church. It's just a building. It's been established by previous missionaries or whatever. It gets established, and then there's no one there to really run it. Very little Christian influence, a very heavy alcohol influence. So Alaska actually consumes the most alcohol per capita of all the states. And so that also means that I'll back up again. There was, basically, in the native cultures, they didn't marry. And so some of the missionaries came through in kind of early last century and kind of taught them about marriage. And then another group came through and taught them about divorce. So now, instead of not being married to one individual, they just marry and divorce and marry and divorce, and it's a real mess. And that paired with all of the alcohol use leads to a lot of the kids, a high percentage of the kids having FASD or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. If you're not familiar, there's a wide range of effects from a mother consuming alcohol when the baby's in the womb, but any damage that occurs to the brain at that point can't be repaired. So it's permanent damage, and a lot of it comes up in these kids. Ask me more about that, about the specifics. Sometime I'd like to share about that, but... So they come from some really rough backgrounds, but many of them are very, very willing to talk about their lives once you get to know them a bit. And so it was just a real, real exciting time. This is my cabin from the first week, and. So we didn't have a pool or anything, of course, so these kids would go out and jump in these creeks that are just melted snow. I mean, that's all it is. And they would stay in there for, you know, like 20 minutes, and I'd get my feet wet, and I'd say, okay, I'm good. I'm going to sit in the sun. But just a beautiful atmosphere to, of course, we kind of started the day with devotions and then moved on through doing some other activities and things like that. And then we had a Bible study, and then we had, in the evenings we had what's called cabin time, where it's just time with your campers to talk about the lessons, talk about their life and things like that. So we had some good productive discussions. This little guy... in the bottom right corner, and who's front and center thuggin' there in the top right. his name is Ivan, and he came from Arctic Village, which is, let me see if I can jump forward here. Arctic Village is pretty close to the Canada border. It's about an hour and a half flight one way from the location of the camp. He was one of these that, talking in the cabin, I asked him about his background. He had a lot of spiritual oppression going on, and I believe demonic influence in his family and in his life. And it was neat to see God really work to release him from the fear of those spirits, realizing that God is much more powerful than any other spirit in the world. He voiced specifically to me that he wants to believe in God. This kid's 10 years old. He says, I want to believe in God, but every time I try to believe, I try to tell God I want to believe him, something comes to me and says, no, don't believe. And it threatens me, and it threatens my family. And so really, I think that just gives a glimpse of some of the things that these guys deal with. Most of the religion is animistic or syncretistic, so mixing in a little of the gospel message with whatever other belief they have. So it's difficult to communicate to them about how Christ is the only way and how Christ is exclusive, and that there's more to it than just, you know, worshiping all of these things. So that was a big... I don't know where he was at with salvation, but it was, I think, definitely a big victory to see God get glory in that way, of him realizing kind of by the end of the week, he was like, I don't fear that anymore. These spirits haven't been back to speak to me. And so really cool to see that. So this is a picture of his village. This is the airport. So you can see there's really nothing there except a visitor center, which basically was just, it had an open door. You walk in, there's a map on the wall, and that's about it. And that's the village from the air. I think there's about maybe 200 people living there, I believe. So very, very small. And this, again, is the closest thing to it is at least an hour flight. So they just have a very small, isolated sort of life that they live. I have some more stuff here. I'm just looking at my time mark. I can't see you over there. Okay. So we did a follow-up trip in the fall, where we went back up to some of these villages where we'd picked up kids from and spent time with them. So I'm going to go kind of fast through these pictures. This was the team that went up there, including two babies less than a year old. So that was pretty exciting. Again, beautiful scenery. There's Mount McKinley again. I had to take a picture of it every time I saw it. There's a church in one of the villages, and this is the village of Alakaket. They actually have a missionary couple living there, so that's a huge praise. That's in their home. They had the kids in there. We did Bible study with them, and just a big one-room house. Everybody has pretty much there. This was Anaktuvuk Pass. Again, just giving you a picture of what it's like. All the kids came out on these Argos and four-wheelers and stuff and loaded up our gear and disappeared. And so we kind of followed them to figure out where our stuff went. It's amazing. You hardly saw any adults around. They were just... you know, back in their homes or just not really interested in coming out. But through the kids, you could start to get to meet some of the parents and start to develop some things there. And this is the church inside the church there. Again, they have a church there that was established by the Presbyterians back in the day, but nobody was meeting there. No one was teaching there. A school principal started just saying, okay, I'm going to do a service. And so we actually have a guy there now. Let's see. Oh, I don't have that picture. But we actually, part of this trip this year was taking a guy up there who's going to be living in the village. So he'll be basically a full-time missionary there. And that's the first one that they'll have in that village. So, again, just there's a real need in these villages for discipleship. I think a couple big takeaways from this that I had were through the camp, our focus was on growth. And so we talked a lot about the parable of the sower. And what stood out to me most, the kind of soil that I could see most, was that rocky soil where the word of God comes and people are eager to receive it, and they're very interested and they want to know, but because there's no root, when they go back to these villages, it just, as the word says, as soon as there's any kind of trial or persecution that comes up because of it, they just forget about it. Or not forget about it, you know, but they can't, their faith can't survive very well. It's very difficult in that way. So, and then the other, I'd say the biggest thing I kind of learned while I was up there was living according to the Spirit, and how important it is to not just start with, okay, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to be a missionary, and here's how I'm going to carry it out, but just to walk day to day, learning, taking time to be available, not operating on such a strict schedule that you don't have time to seek out the needs of other people. You don't have time to change your plans for the sake of somebody else who needs to hear the gospel, or who just needs a hand, needs a friend, in order to build a relationship that can lead to communication of the gospel. So, I had just a couple of things on that. Just being led by the Spirit. You know, Isaac was sharing last week, and he used the verse Galatians 5:16. This I say, walk in the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh. So walking in the Spirit is protection for us from the flesh. Of course, Galatians 5:25 is, if we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit, or let us walk in the Spirit. So we've been given life by the Spirit of God, and we need to be walking in accordance with that. So the Lord's really been working on me about how to live day to day and insist on being led by the Spirit, not making all of my decisions based on just a necessary, okay, this makes sense, this is what I'll do sort of thing, but really seeking Him out in His Word, seeking Him out in prayer to know what He would have me to do each step along the way. So I appreciate your prayers, and definitely I will share just a few prayer requests real quick. Well, some praises first. Just it was overall a very challenging experience and very stretching. And just really kind of brought out, like, it's not just about learning about the airplanes up there. It's learning to work in a volunteer organization with minuscule resources and just, you know, working with people for a common cause is difficult. But, you know, Christ prayed for us in John 17 that we would be united together for the purpose of the gospel so that all people would see that that he is real and he is true. So also grateful for that little guy, Ivan, and growth in other campers, just being able to see them realize more about who God is. And for safety throughout the whole summer. I know many of you were praying for that, so I really appreciate that. And I also had shared some requests about needing a job and housing when I got back to North Carolina, and the Lord really amazingly worked out those things. So through people in the chapel like Larry and Barbara and Zach Weigand, and so just that's been really amazing. And really grateful to God for those things. Some requests I would have. Many of you heard about Dwayne, our director's son, Dave. We actually heard when we were up on the follow-up trip, he was killed in a helicopter crash just like a week before I came back. So, of course, just a tremendous tragedy for Dwayne. It was his oldest son, and he was married. He didn't have any kids, but just be praying for Dwayne and Dave's family as they continue to work through that. Not only for the grief, but also because Dave owned the whole property that the organization was located on, and he was its biggest supporter. So really kind of there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen with the organization and how they're going to move forward. So just please keep those things in your prayers. And for me specifically, figuring out plans for further training. There's something I've been looking at the possibility of called Northern Ministry Training that'll happen up there in May. So that's something I'm looking at, continuing my pilot certification and A&P, thinking about the possibility of Bible school, just all these things going on in my head. So appreciate your prayers on that. And finances for making another trip up there, spending another summer up there. I just pray that the Lord would give me guidance on that and figuring out how to best go about preparing for that. And lastly, just I think if anything, what I experienced and what I hope to have shown you tonight should encourage us to pray, as Jesus said, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send out laborers into his harvest. We can see it here. It seems sometimes more visible when you see it in a setting like this, but the harvest truly is plentiful, and there's so much opportunity for us to participate through the grace of God, participate with him in bringing souls to a saving knowledge of him. So pray for those things. But like Nate Bramson says, be careful when you pray for those things, because often the first person he's going to send is going to be you. So whether that means taking another step in your daily life to reach others, or for some of you it may even mean going to a different place or location. So, yeah, thank you for hearing me out. Sorry, I did go a bit over. But thanks very much. And that's all I got. Yeah. Father God, thank you for this evening. Thank you for this time together. Lord, for the unity that your Son brings us. And God, thank you for preserving each one of us. And Lord, for saving us by your power and by your mercy and grace. Lord, promising us an inheritance with you and for all the blessings that you give. Lord, thank you for the experiences of this summer. And Lord, I just pray that this would be encouraging to the body here at Shannon Hills. And Lord, that it would just further encourage us and inspire us to not grow weary in well-doing, knowing that we will reap a harvest in due season if we don't faint. Lord, thank you again for this evening, and it's in Jesus' name we pray.